Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. Welcome. Great to have you aboard. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, this is not one of those serious questions for you. It's just a question.
Oh, whew.
Yeah, I'm not going to put you on the spot or anything, but you like Neil Young's music, right?
Yeah, I do. I like it a lot.
Where would you go to get it if you just, like, you're on the fly, you're driving, what have you, and you want to hear it? Where might you go to get it?
Oh, well, I've got a Spotify account. It has everything. So I'd probably just go to Spotify to listen to it.
Well, it doesn't have everything today. I don't know if you probably heard the news.
I did.
Yeah. I know you did. Right. Okay, so here's what's so Neil Young, Southern Man, Cinnamon Girl, Sugar Mountain,
Old Man,
Heart of Gold,
yeah, Harvest Moon,
wonderful music, love it. Philadelphia too. That's a very poignant song that he wrote. I was part of the soundtrack for the movie, but in any case,
that was Bruce Springsteen.
No, he had a song in that, but look it up. The theme song Philadelphia.
I love it if I can prove you wrong.
The theme song Philadelphia is written in and was performed by Neil Young.
Oh, man.
See?
All right.
See?
You win this round.
Yeah. So here's what happened for the benefit of those listening right now. This is from the Wall Street Journal. You mentioned Spotify, Cyrus. Well, you won't be able to find Neil Young's music on Spotify because Spotify took all of his music down, but not because, you know, they didn't like him. Spotify removed Neil Young's music. They confirmed this yesterday because of his objections to the Joe Rogan podcast. Now, full disclosure here, I've never listened to the podcast. I know of him. I probably wouldn't be able to tell you what his voice sounded like because I've never heard the podcast. I'm too busy doing a show here. So I don't have any direct experience with that. I know it's very popular, but he, among other things, has an opinion on vaccines that just is maddening to people like Neil Young, who said to Spotify, he posted an open letter, and he said that, in essence, you can't have both Joe Rogan and Neil Young on your platform. You can't have both. So either you deplatform Joe Rogan because of his rogue comments on vaccines and such. He's a ginnam. Or Neil Young said, I want you to take my music down. Now, the interesting twist in the story, Cyrus, is that he apparently thought better of it because he removed that letter. It was posted on his website. He removed it. And I guess maybe people said, like, hey, calm down. You know, it's, you know, maybe this is not the hill you want to die on. But even after he removed it.
Once it's on the internet, it's on the internet forever.
Forever. Yeah. So he basically threw down the gauntlet. He just said, I want you to take my music down. Or I want you to deplatform him, Rogan. Because of what he said about, or what he says.
And did you hear what Spotify had to say about that?
Yeah, I'll get to that. But actually, you can quote that part. Here's part of his letter. He says, I sincerely hope that other artists and record companies will move off the Spotify platform and stop supporting Spotify's deadly misinformation about COVID. I can't really expect that to happen. Now, here's the thing that I find the most interesting. According to the Wall Street Journal, Spotify represents 60% of the streaming music to his listeners. And so that would result in, say, 60% of his revenues, the money that he makes, 60% of it is now gone because he demanded that Spotify take his music down, and Spotify did. They made their decision, and they took his music down. So now you can't get it. Not that he's hurting. I mean, I think he can make rent this month. I don't think that's an issue for him.
I think I have the official statement from Spotify here.
Yeah.
This is what they had to say.
Do tell.
Whoops.
You know, I post. It's funny you mention that because I posted on Twitter a moment ago. I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Spotify's streaming revenues for Sweet Home Alabama went through the roof today. And the reason for that, the backstory. Do I need to explain the backstory? I don't think so.
No, people. If you know, you know. It's
if you know, that's right. And if you know, then that should be wildly funny.
Yes, it should be. It's funny to me.
So here's my take on this, because I'm not taking sides on this issue. But I thought that, you know, like Neil Young and his crew were all about diversity and tolerance. And yet it seems like time after time after time, they show themselves to be the most intolerant people of all, where they just cannot abide that somebody might have a different opinion, even on a scientific issue. I mean, I didn't want to get into the whole polemic, because that's all it is anymore, just people bickering and fighting.
Yeah, but this is crazy. Mm-hmm. From Neil Young. I followed this guy forever, and he's always been against, you know, big government, big companies, big pharma. Mm-hmm. And it feels like there's a weird leftist turn here where all of a sudden they're very pro big pharma, very pro government. Mm-hmm. And it's just weird. My head's spinning trying to keep up.
Yeah, I saw it. My interpretation of it was this is virtue signaling. I mean, like, why did he need to do that? What is the compelling reason to do that? Obviously he thought it initially that Spotify would say, oh, yeah, you're right. We'll take him down. I guess he's a cash cow, Joe Rogan, from what I understand. Not only does he make a ton of money, but he's making a ton of money for the platforms that carry his material. But, I mean, what would be the reason why you would do this if you were Neil Young, other than wanting to score virtue signaling points with the in crowd? I don't see an upside other than that. What else is there? Well, he's standing on his principles, maybe. But 60% of his – could you imagine slashing your salary by 60%, Cyrus, just to make a point?
Well, it's also.
I'm not suggesting you do that.
Please don't put that idea out there. Neil Young just sold 50% of his catalog like a year ago. So this isn't even. Someone else is losing a lot of money. I wonder if he'll get sued for this.
The plot thickens.
Yeah, pretty interesting.
So he will not suffer. Interesting. If I understand you correctly, so he himself will not suffer from the loss of revenues by doing this. It's whoever the chump was who bought the catalog who now is seeing 60% less revenue because 60% of streaming is gone now.
Ouch.
That's interesting. And, you know, if we were in a litigious society where people would sue other people at the drop of a hat, oh, wait a minute, we are in one of those. So, yeah, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, but that could be a development. So, yeah, so that's why I think that maybe, again, not taking sides in the polemic, I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if Spotify's streaming revenues for Sweet Home Alabama were going through the roof today. By the way, this is pretty good. Return of Gimli on Twitter. Responding to that comment that I made on Twitter, says many people will miss the wit in this comment. It's a shame.
Well, you got to tell people what your comment is.
Well, I did. I did.
Oh, you
I
did?
Read
okay.
It. Wouldn't be surprised if Spotify's streaming revenues for Sweet Home Alabama went through the roof today.
Yep.
Is that sufficiently enigmatic?
That's hilarious, Patrick. It's really funny.
I just came up with that in the 30 seconds before the show started.
I approve this message.
Thank you. Now, I want to get on to weightier matters. Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer has announced his retirement. And here's the write-up in the Christian Post. He will reportedly retire after the current term, offering President Biden his first chance at a high court nomination. NBC News reported Wednesday that, quote, people familiar with his thinking, referring to the justice, say that the 83-year-old left-leaning justice appointed by Bill Clinton in 1994 will retire by the end of the term. The move comes as progressives began calling on Breyer last year to retire ahead of the 2022 midterm elections, since Democrats hold control of the White House and the U.S. Senate. Breyer is the court's oldest member. Keep in mind, by the way, that all of this is taking place within the context of the likelihood, I hope it happens, I really do, the possibility, maybe the likelihood, that the Supreme Court will rule in a decision that they heard the arguments for earlier this year, or what was it, within the last, say, 60 days, that will be announced in June, that could effectively overturn Roe versus Wade. So that's the dramatic context that his resignation occurs within. His retirement comes after former President Trump appointed three conservative-leaning justices to the nation's highest court, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett, giving the court a conservative majority. Although Breyer has yet to make an official announcement, his intentions of retiring were confirmed by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who said, for virtually his entire adult life, including a quarter century on the U.S. Supreme Court, Stephen Breyer has served his country with the highest possible distinction. He is and always will be, and always has been, rather, a model jurist. Schumer vowed to give Biden's nominee to replace Breyer a prompt hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that he will be considered, or he or she, rather, will be considered and confirmed by the full United States Senate with all deliberate speed. As Biden has pledged to nominate the first black woman to the Supreme Court, Senator Dick Durbin, Democrat of Illinois, who is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he tweeted, Biden has the opportunity to nominate someone who will bring diversity, experience, and an even-handed approach to the administration of justice. He says, I look forward to moving the president's nominee expeditiously through the committee. And then in the article, there are a series of different names that are given of black lawyers, black judges who are, I guess, in the running. But I'd like to just turn to something that I posted on Twitter 2 months ago, Cyrus. And as I was pondering this turn of events, you know, with another Supreme Court vacancy, back on, what was it, November the 15th at 2:11 p.m., I was just sort of noodling. I was just theorizing. It was a purely hypothetical situation, but I wrote the following on Twitter. Not a prediction, just a nightmare scenario, because for me, this would be a nightmare scenario. Not a prediction, just a nightmare scenario many on the left would love. An underperforming Kamala, referring to Vice President Harris, an underperforming Kamala is invited to step down from her VP position, for a position on the Supreme Court. Pete Buttigieg replaces her as vice president. President Biden resigns office due to health reasons. Buttigieg becomes president number 47 and names Michelle Obama as vice president. Now, for some people, that would be a dream sequence. That would be the best of all possible worlds for them. But the reason I reference it is I had nothing whatsoever that made me think that any of this might happen. I was just trying to imagine what would be, for me at least, a nightmare scenario. And lo and behold, now there is constant chatter in the last 24 hours about
she's way too popular as a vice president, Patrick, to remove her. Way too popular.
Well, see, there's the rub. All the polls that I've seen, the write-ups in left-leaning and hard-left outlets, she's not popular. At least she's not popular as a vice president. She didn't win the nomination. In fact, she dropped out long before, you know, the nomination was decided. She, by the way, just as a matter of fact, you may remember in watching the candidates' debate in the debates leading up to the primary for the Democratic nominee, she publicly told Joe Biden to his face on the platform, I believe the accusations against you made by women that you raped them, I believe that they're true. And she's never retracted that as far as I'm aware. But I mean, that's easily discovered. If you just look that up on YouTube, you'll see.
Would you work with someone if you believed that?
No.
No, of course not.
I would either need to come to the point where I believed it was not true, or if I believed it were true, I would just say I can't be your vice president.
Right.
So that's one of those strange details of this whole story. I mean, it doesn't figure into this issue about the Supreme Court and all that, but it has always struck me as odd that she publicly accused him to his face in front of a national audience in a primary debate, saying that she believed the accusations against him regarding rape were true. This is, of course, paraphrasing. And yet that it just sort of went down the memory hole. And now she's his vice president. But to your point, Cyrus, no, my impression from what I see, especially from what I see on the left, is that she's not popular. And there's a real exodus in her staff. I mean, hardly a week goes by that you don't read about some other high profile person on her staff who has left. And there just doesn't seem to be any traction. It would surprise me a great deal if President Biden were to run again, if he were to ask her to run with him. Now, who knows how politics works? These are backroom deals, and I can only speculate. But it's just weird to me that now her name is being repeatedly brought up as a potential for a replacement for Justice Breyer. And we'll see if that goes anywhere. It may not go anywhere. It may just fizzle out. But then again, if it were to happen, it would open up all kinds of possibilities for other politicians. And it might, by moving her, because her credentials as a pro-abortion stalwart are unquestioned. I mean, she is 100% to the hilt in favor of abortion and has spent whatever time in her public career that has dealt with that issue. She has spent it doing everything she can to promote abortion and strengthen it. So from that standpoint, especially given the precarious nature of Roe versus Wade right now, it would seem to me to be a very appealing possibility. She may not be all that great, you know, no great shakes when it comes to her role as vice president. She doesn't seem to be getting traction there, but I don't think anybody on the left would doubt her qualifications and her commitment to doing what she could on the Supreme Court to strengthen abortion. You see the angle I'm coming from on that one, Cyrus?
Yeah, loud and clear.
So that's why I think there may be more to it. I hope I'm wrong for the reasons I just mentioned, but you never know.
Sometimes, I think it's crazy that you wrote that tweet. That's not the first time you've done that, where you look back and be like, I know Patrick talked about this like 2 years ago, and then I go back, oh, there it is. I'm you and the Simpsons.
Well, that's scary.
Where do you get your info?
You know, honestly, when I wrote that, I was just sort of musing, and it had nothing to do with anything because there was nothing in the news. There was nothing about her that I particularly remembered. I was just trying to play three-dimensional chess and see, like, if this happened and then that happened, what else could happen? So we'll see. I'm not making a prediction. I'm not saying that I think it will happen, but wouldn't it be eerily strange if it did happen? I mean, it would be completely eerie if all the other pieces fell into place like I had theorized, but I'm not holding my breath on that. So we'll take a break. If you're interested in the article that talks a lot about Kamala Harris as a potential replacement for the Supreme Court vacancy coming up soon with the retirement of Justice Breyer, there is a New York Post article that Cyrus will post for you, so you can check it out for yourself, see what you think about that. And if it turns out that that happens, don't blame me for it, okay? I was just speculating, that's all. I'll be right back. Enjoy the music. I'll be right back right after this.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Turn it up. That's good. This is the easiest song in the world to play for a garage band. I think, anyway. A lot of fun. Cyrus, you don't plan to do...
This is so silly.
It's funny.
It's fun.
But I think only not everybody will understand why it's funny.
No, I guess
so.
Not.
You'll have to hit the Wikipedias.
Yep. Yeah, you want to know why this is funny. If you don't know why, you'll want to know why.
Yeah. You don't have any plans to travel to Denmark anytime soon, do you?
Oh, yeah, next week. Why?
Oh. Well, good timing. Because Denmark, as in the country of, is officially removing virtually all COVID restrictions starting on Tuesday.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Wisconsin.
No, different Denmark.
Oh, man.
Different Denmark, yeah. You're going to that Denmark. But if you if you decide to go to the country of Denmark, you know, a near neighbor, a next-door neighbor of Germany and Sweden, so they've announced that they're removing all their COVID restrictions. They do have high infections right now. They also have high vaccination rates. Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen said, "We are saying farewell to the restrictions and welcome to life as we knew it before Corona. Denmark is set to become the first European Union country to lift domestic curbs despite the Omicron wave sweeping the continent, according to a survey of AFP bureaus. The successful vaccine program proved a super weapon, according to Frederiksen, who says it has given us a solid defense against infection that continues. That's why the government decided that the coronavirus should no longer be considered a threatening disease for society. That means the de facto lifting of all domestic restrictions, including the use of a vaccine mask, a vaccine pass, mask wearing, early closings for bars and restaurants. There will be a few minimal measures that are going to be in place at the border regarding testing and quarantining for the next few weeks, and then those are going to go by the way as well. Denmark had already lifted all of its restrictions on September the 10th before reintroducing the use of a COVID pass at the beginning of November when, what was that, Delta? I've lost track of which one it was at what time, but they've just backed off again on it again. Health Minister Lena Hallengren said the majority of restrictions will be removed by February the 9th. Faced with a lower level of hospitalizations than in previous waves, several other European countries, including France, Ireland, and the United Kingdom, have also announced the lifting or near eradication of their restrictions. The UK, we talked about that yesterday, they're eliminating all of the things. They're eliminating everything, according to Boris Johnson, who may not be in office that much longer, but mask mandates, vaccines, COVID passes, all that stuff, they're abolishing all of it. So that's happening. And I mean, that line right there, going back to life as we knew it before Corona, boy, does that resonate. I mean, say what you will, think what you wish about vaccines and everything else. The whole psychodrama that we've been through for the last 2 years on COVID, think what you will about it. But I mean, I think we could all agree how wonderful it would be if we could just get back to life as we knew it before that. Now, some people, oddly enough, and this, you know, this pains me to think of people who live this way or think this way. But honestly, there are people for whom that is a drag. They like it. I don't know why. I don't know how you could like these things, but they have become so enamored of the restrictions and the lockdowns and the masks and the social distancing and the, you know, I hate you if you don't have a vaccination. For some people, I think getting back to life as it was before Corona for them is not going to be that much fun. And they will miss the good old days of COVID vaccines and restrictions and passes and all that other stuff. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm with Denmark and England and France and all the others safely and following the science, of course. Let's get back to normal to the extent that we can. And I think it's happening, Cyrus. I think it's happening. Let's just hope that there's no other. I mean, some monkeys escaped from a truck the other day. Remember that story? We talked about that?
I sure
do. The open wound on that woman's hand and the monkey feces flying all over the place. And when the authorities got to the site of the crash, they immediately killed all the monkeys and one got away. And the one that got away, I don't know if, well, actually more than one got away. They caught a couple of them. We'll have to. Can you check to see if that lone monkey on the run is still on the run? Is he on the lam still, or did they catch him? If you could check that.
Monkey
for
on
me.
The Run. That sounds like a Neil Young song.
Or a Paul McCartney song, but that was banned on the run. It wouldn't rhyme, Monkey on the Run. But yeah, so I mean, I want, like you said, that movie, the horror movie that started
Contagion.
Contagion. And it started with a van full of monkeys spilled out onto the pavement. I never saw the movie. I was probably reading the Bible when you saw that movie. But so as I'm saying, let's hope that we're back to normal soon. Let's hope that we can wake up from this long national nightmare. How odd and ironic it would be if some other thing popped up that we weren't expecting, just like we weren't expecting COVID. Nobody's expecting COVID. Nobody was expecting how Saddam Hussein got caught. And cast your mind back to when that took place. That was nearly 20 years ago. So December the 13th, 2003 is when Special Forces caught up with Saddam Hussein. He was near his hometown of Tikrit, and he was found hiding in an underground bunker. They called those spider holes. He was in a farmhouse kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and he was hiding down there, and they tracked him. And now there's some information about how they tracked him, which I find kind of funny, honestly. I mean, it's a tragic story. He met a tragic end. He was hanged for his crimes. But here's what happened. 4 months earlier, Maddox, who was a former Army interrogation specialist who led the hunt for the ousted Iraqi dictator, this according to archive.triblive.com, he was speaking recently, and he revealed some of the details about how they tracked down Saddam Hussein. Because it wasn't in a place where you would expect to find him, down in a hole, like in a barn. So 4 months before they captured him, he had interrogated Saddam Hussein's cook, who told him that his favorite dish was maskouf, which is grilled fish spiced with salt and pepper. Hussein's inner circle couldn't go to the fish market after the dictator was overthrown, but Maddox, the interrogator, he knew that Hussein would have to get his fish some other way. Another source told him of an associate of Saddam Hussein who had built a fish pond and stocked it with carp. A fisherman at the pond told him where Hussein's bodyguard was hiding. The bodyguard eventually led the special ops team to Hussein. If you look at any high-value target, Maddox said, you can track that target down through its vices or his or her vices. Saddam Hussein was tracked down through his fish. Osama bin Laden was tracked down through his messengers and his wives. All high-value targets are human. After a while, they're like, man, I need some fish. How many times have you said those words, Cyrus? At the end of a long day? Or maybe at the beginning of a long day? Man, I need some fish.
Yeah, not so much in the morning.
You're drinking your first cup of coffee. You know, some fish would be really good right about now. And you grab a tasty carp out of the refrigerator.
Come on, man. It's too early.
Do you remember the Bass-O-Matic commercial from Saturday Night Live?
I was just thinking about a blender. Mm, I was like,
this is good bass.
Mm. So gross.
Bass-O-Matic. Man, I need some fish. So Maddox, he interrogated more than three. He's the Special Forces interrogator guy. He interrogated more than 300 people before he found Saddam Hussein. Most were uncooperative, but Maddox said he did not resort to waterboarding or other harsh interrogation techniques. That's good. I'm glad he didn't. He got Hussein's bodyguard to talk by having a special ops roundup 40 of his relatives. So I guess they got all these relatives together. They didn't harm them. They didn't do anything to them, but that's when the guy broke. He said, we've got to go right now. And they tracked him down because he had to have his fish. So that's the story. I thought it was interesting. And maybe if there's a God door there, it's the point that he made. And that is that being human beings, we all like our creature comforts. You know, for some guys, they got to have their fish. For other guys, it's, and not just guys, of course, human beings, all of us. We all have the things that we like, food, etc. And I guess really only the people who are extremely austere in their lives, they live lives of great, great sacrifice. They limit what they eat, or they eat food that isn't particularly good, or doesn't taste good, or they limit their amount of sleep. I'm thinking of people who are very ascetical. They're not weighed down. They're not chained to the appetites and desires that they have for sleep or for food or for hot showers or for drink or what have you, because they eschew them anyway. So they live in a way that doesn't tie them to those things. So when they don't have those things, they don't miss those things. I think that's probably what kept St. Paul going, I would think. You know, he said that he buffeted his body. He says, I beat my body and make it my slave. Did he mean that, like, was it self-flagellation? Possibly, I don't know, because it doesn't tell us. He just says that he used to beat his body to make it his slave, lest I, who have preached to others, may myself be disqualified, he said. So it seems that he had an ascetical streak in which he would intentionally do without. That's how he could survive the way he did. And all of the imprisonments and the beatings and even tortures at times. He talks about how he was adrift at sea more than once after a shipwreck. He was floating in the open ocean until somebody picked him up, and suffering heat and cold and thirst and lack of food and all the other things that he went through, including beatings and imprisonment. I don't think you could live that way and succeed if you were not ascetical in your personal habits. So maybe there's a lesson there. Saddam Hussein was finally caught because of his fondness for fish. Man, I got to have some fish right about now. Can you imagine if that's what he was thinking? When's the guy going to get here with the fish? And then it wasn't the guy with the fish. It was the special forces that showed up. That would be a rude awakening, don't you think, Cyrus?
Yeah, especially if he never got the fish.
I bet he didn't. maybe they gave him fish sticks or something when he was in prison. I don't know what they gave him. But I bet he didn't get that dish. So word to the wise. Oh, also, this too, and we're going to go to phone calls in a moment. My number is 888-914-9149. New York Times, great article, made me feel good. Walking just 10 minutes a day could lead to you having a longer life. They say if you walk an extra 10 minutes a day, you could prevent, and they say collectively, if all of us in the U.S., that would prevent more than 111,000 deaths per year. This is according to a new study of movement and mortality that was published in the JAMA Internal Medicine magazine. The study used data about physical activity and death rates for thousands of American adults to estimate how many deaths every year might be averted if everyone exercised more. The results indicate that even a little extra physical activity could potentially stave off hundreds of thousands of premature deaths over the coming years if enough people were to do this. 10 minutes, that's all we ask, I guess. Science offers plenty of evidence about how much we exercise influences how long you live. In a telling 2019 study published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 8% of all deaths in the United States are attributed to inadequate levels of activity. Likewise, a British study in 2015 found that men and women who exercised for at least 150 minutes per week, the standard recommendation in Europe and the United States, reduced their risk of premature death by at least 25% compared to people who didn't exercise. More dramatically, a 2020 examination of the lifestyles and death risks of about 44,000 adults in the U.S. and Europe concluded that the most sedentary men and women in the study, who sat almost all day, were as much as, check this out, Cyrus, 260% more likely to die prematurely compared to the people who exercised, 20, 30 minutes a day most days.
That's a big number.
260. I'm sorry, but you're 260% more likely to die early because all you do is sit in your chair all day.
And there's more to it than just extra days on the earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, just on a personal note, I was feeling kind of down the last few days, and my buddy's like, well, have you exercised? I'm like, no, I've been too busy to exercise. So I was like, well, exercise, dummy. And so I went out and I got my heart rate up and I did some stretches. And lo and behold, I feel good. A whole lot better.
You felt good like you knew you would?
So no, that, go get some exercise.
You got the endorphins going.
Yep, that's right. So if you got the blues, the winter blues, get that heart rate up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I completely agree with that. Should I reveal one of my secrets, Cyrus, about the show, or should I keep it a secret?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe you should tell me what your secret is during the break.
I'm going to go for broke. I'm just going to say it. People who know me know this, but I don't think anyone else listening knows this.
You do burpees right before the show starts.
I do the show standing, 100% standing the whole time. And in the studio, you know, everything is raised up so that it's eye level. And there was a time when I used to do the show, many years ago, when I used to do the show sitting down. But I noticed that I just felt so much better when I do the show standing. Also, it's better to stand than sit, as they're saying in this article. So I never looked back. So I had the studio, you know, they were kind enough to rearrange things for me. And so now whenever I'm in the studio doing the show, which is Monday through Friday, I'm doing the show standing. And it feels good. Kind of like you after you worked out yesterday.
That's right. Yep. That's good.
Could you post this article, please, from the New York Times? I'd like people
just
to read it.
Just did it. It's up there right now. It should be at the
Thank
very
you.
Top.
And if they say, well, I don't have Twitter, not that you need to have Twitter, but if they say that, where would you send them?
Oh, go to... oh, you're talking to me.
Relevant, you're in the headlights.
Relevantradio.com/Patrick.
Right. Everything's there. It's embedded in the show feed, the Twitter feed. Okay, so quick timeout. Straight to the phone calls on the other side. The number is 888-914-9149. You checking that Spotify, Cyrus? I'll be right back right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Turn it up. Well done, Cyrus. Well done. Oh, by the way, it's inevitable. The scolds come out of the woodwork.
Oh, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Not about this.
Not about this, oh, okay. But okay. Where did it go?
I don't know who can argue that this is silly.
Well, so I posted what I posted. You know, wouldn't be surprised if Spotify streaming revenues for Sweet Home Alabama went through the roof today. It's obviously an inside joke, but I think a lot of people they know what the inside joke is.
Inside joke heard around the world.
Yeah, so it didn't take long, but a very nice lady, she said, Joe Rogan's podcast, RE COVID-19 vaccine spread misinformation. It is unethical and potentially harmful. I am a Catholic MD, politically independent, but influencers like him are concerning in their error. I know, free speech, etc. Okay, well, I understand where she's coming from. I certainly do. But it's like, I mean, some people can be so tightly wrapped that they can't pause even just for a moment, it seems, and take a look at something from a different perspective. And I'm not talking about vaccines. I'm just talking about the story that's in the news today that Neil Young, great singer, great songwriter, love his music. I've loved his music for as long as I've known about him, which stretches way back. We used to play Cinnamon Girl in one of the bands I was in. Great bass line on that
great
song.
Great song.
It's a great song. I love his music.
Yeah, me too.
But he wanted to virtue signal. I think that's what it looks like to me. And so he wrote an open letter demanding that Spotify either take down all of his music off their platform or take down Joe Rogan's podcast off their platform. And I guess he thought better of it because the letter disappeared not that long afterward. And Spotify took him up on it and said, okay, adios. So they deplatformed, because he demanded it, so they deplatformed all his music. It's a business decision, nothing personal. This is just business.
Well, I wonder about that, Patrick. I don't know if he can tell a service not to stream his music. I don't know if he has that power. I mean, he can tell them, but I don't know that they had
they're
to.
Not obligated.
They weren't obligated. So I think they were like, okay, you want to step up? We'll step into the mat with you and let's see where all this where all the debris lies.
Yeah, and I do believe you're right about that. I mean, he can't say. Well, I mean, he could say it, and he did say it, but he didn't have any recourse that I'm aware of to force them to do it. And I think he completely expected that they would say, "Oh my gosh, you're absolutely right," and it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, I know he got really mad at Trump too, President Trump, when I think Trump was playing "Keep on Rockin' in the Free World," and Neil Young came out and said, "Don't use my music."
I remember that,
and yeah. I don't remember how that ended. I don't know if that campaign ended up pulling the music, or if they had the rights to use it. I can't remember.
I don't know. And as an artist, he has a right to express himself. I mean, I wouldn't want, if I wrote a hit song, I wouldn't want Planned Parenthood to be using it, or, you know, somebody I disagreed with. I mean, so I can understand that, and I don't fault him for that. But the whole point of it is not vaccines. The whole point of it is not Joe Rogan right or is he wrong? And, you know, I don't have a horse in that race. I don't have a stake in that. That's not the point. And this is where the people who are quick to scold don't seem to get the point. The point is not that. The point is, here's a guy who, and we're talking here about Neil Young, who virtue signaled and it blew up in his face because he thought that by saying, you know, I don't want to be on the same platform with that guy because of all of his misinformation. So you either take down my music or you take down his podcast. And with very little encouragement, Spotify said, okay. And they took down Neil Young's music. That's the irony of the story. Mm-hmm. People can believe what they want on either side of the issue, and I respect people's opinions. I don't necessarily agree with them, but I can certainly respect their reason for having an opinion. But that's not the point. So I guess when people pop up and they start scolding, it's an indication that maybe they didn't catch that part of the story. Anyway, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Brian in Albuquerque. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Patrick. I'll make it quick. Yesterday afternoon, right at the end of your show, a gentleman called in and his daughter was suffering from religious OCD, scrupulosity. Mm-hmm. And it is a nasty thing that attacks, you know, something that for Catholics is so important to us, our religion. Our son deals with that as well, and so we have come across a few resources, and I just wanted to pass those along.
All right.
So those are IOCDF.org. It's the International OCD Foundation. Their website's pretty good. They also have YouTube videos that hopefully the gentleman will find helpful, and his daughter. Okay. Another is the Mayo Clinic has intensive OCD treatment. Not everybody can travel and get into that, but they do have a pretty good website that also has resources, mm-hmm. and that is anxietycoach.mayoclinic.org. And finally, there's a really good scrupulosity therapist who no longer sees patients in person, but has a pretty good YouTube channel with a lot of resources, and her name is Natasha Daniels. So I just wanted to call in with those, and I wish the best to the gentleman and his daughter.
Yeah, that's kind of you. And I hope the same is true for your son. I hope that he's getting past the issues with scrupulosity. Yeah, those kind of resources are helpful. I would like to draw a distinction. And by the way, thank you, Brian. I appreciate it. I would like to draw a distinction here, however, between the clinically diagnosable disorder of OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, and the related disorders that are similar to it. Scrupulosity is not that. Sometimes people who have obsessive compulsive disorder also suffer from scrupulosity, which is a spiritual malady. but the two are not the same thing. So they may in fact coincide in the same person, but with regard to scrupulosity, that you can have somebody who by no means has OCD and yet still has scrupulosity. So it is good, obviously, as the caller mentioned a moment ago, that if it's diagnosed, then to receive treatment and strategies, I guess, to help you overcome it if that's possible. But in the case of scrupulosity, which is a tendency, and it's an exaggerated tendency in the spirit to magnify things into sins that are not actually sinful, or to magnify the magnitude, I guess I'm being redundant there, of a sin that may be a minor sin, but in the mind of the person who's suffering from scrupulosity, it takes the proportion of something truly terrible, when in fact it's not. So a good remedy for those who are suffering from scrupulosity, I think, is going to be time with a spiritual director and preferably a priest who can also incorporate the sacrament of confession as part of spiritual direction. I think that's the preferred way to go about it. At least that's my opinion on the issue. And any helps that would assist with an OCD condition that's part of it would also be very good. But I just want to make sure that everyone's clear on the distinction between the two. OCD is not scrupulosity. Scrupulosity is not OCD. But they do sometimes coincide. Let's see. 888-914-9149. We'll go to California now and talk to John. Good morning, John.
Hello, John. Hello, Patrick. My name is John. Hi, California. John. So my daughter is says she's bisexual, and my wife and I don't know how to deal with it. So we're in these therapy sessions, and she wants us to know how we're supposed to negotiate this. How are we going to support her when we're trying to do this without abandoning our faith? We believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. We know we believe in this church, the Catholic Church. And so we don't know how to deal with this. And I'm not sure if you have any questions, but I need to go to work. So I have to go.
Okay. Well, how old is your daughter would be my first question.
17 years old.
Okay. And she still lives at home with you, I presume, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, if you have to go to work, I'll let you go.
Yeah. So,
Okay. Fair enough. I will offer a few cursory thoughts, and I'm not sure if maybe this will be helpful to you, because obviously this is a topic that would require a great deal more discussion. My lead is always going to be with compassion and love, and show her compassion and love. At every step, be tender with her, be loving with her. But at the same time, obviously, especially since you're mom and dad, you also have to speak the truth in love. So if everything is focused on your love for her and your desire to see her happy, that's going to be a reflection of the bigger picture of God's love for her and God's desire for her to be happy. And there are things in this life, we all experience attractions to them, that are pleasurable and appealing to us, but they're not good for us. So just because something feels right, or it feels good, or it feels really good, doesn't mean that it is good. And this is true of life in general. So perhaps as you are talking with her, you know, help her to see beyond our everyday human appetites and passions, the things that draw us, that attract us sexually, food-wise, entertainment, you know, there are many of them, and we all have our triggers. So we all have things that we are drawn to, some more than others. So help her see that this is not unique to her. It's not unique to people who are attracted to members of the same sex. It's true of all people. And so heterosexual people have to grapple with these same attractions. And the point here, I think, is to help her understand that not everything that feels good is good, and that not everything that one is drawn to or one desires to have or experience is going to help you be truly happy and ultimately, of course, be happy in heaven with God. So this is why there are certain moral imperatives, the thou shalts and the thou shalt nots, that God has given, not to complicate our lives or to make us unhappy. or to cheat us out of some fun, but so that we don't wind up doing things that in the long run will not only make us unhappy in this life in various ways, but also could preclude our ability to be happy forever in heaven with God. Now, that's a message of love. And it's also an invitation to a deeper conversion, which we all have to experience. And Jesus himself said, if you wish to be my follower, pick up your cross and follow me. He also said, if you wish to be my follower, deny yourself. And what that means, I believe anyway, is whatever your particular appetites and passions are, if those things are incongruent, if they are incompatible with being a follower of Jesus Christ, then deny yourself those things. If it's alcohol, if it's whatever, I mean, the list is long, but it doesn't take much imagination, I don't think, to be able to come up with a list for each person. So talk about Jesus, talk about his call to holiness, talk about how this is something that God will give us grace for, give her grace for, talk about the way in which she can experience friendship that does not have to be erotic, doesn't have to be sexual in order to be a friend with somebody, and so much more. There's a great organization called Courage. Their website is couragerc.org. I would go there and get further resources. I hope that's helpful. I'll be right back.